This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
What is up, Wisconsin and beyond? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Do you know that you don't only have to listen? You can watch the show to see all of the crazy faces I make. We stream it live on the Civic Media channel on YouTube. You can also find the show streaming at my Facebook handle, at Maggie Dawn Show, on the Book of Faces. It's also on the thing that we used to call Twitter. I don't know what it is. I just call it a swamp or a sewer now. Who knows? I'm also on Blue Sky because that's a lot less weird. AOC hitting the first person on Blue Sky to hit a million followers today. Kind of cool. If you haven't been on the Blue Sky, go check it out. Again, the handle's at Maggie Dawn Show. You can find me on the Twit still. And sometimes having a little bit of a freak out. I enjoy that. And occasionally on the gram as well. All those socials. Today, we got a great show for you. I did a little bit of reorganization of the order of what we're going to talk about today. Yesterday, folks, I said we're going to start top of show by talking about your favorite local and state charities as it is Giving Tuesday. We're going to hold that just because I had to get these two great guests in to help us with some really interesting conversations about some recent news. So if you have favorite local charities, do not despair. First of all, you can text those in and I will shout them out. Cardi and I will try to keep a running list. If you start texting those in now, we're going to try to keep a running tally of those. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. But if you want to make a personal, you want to personally attest to the impact of a particular local charity, I have a few that I've been personally involved with over my many years as a Milwaukee resident. We're going to do that at about 3:40, 3:45 today. Okay, so we will do that. It'll be basically how we close up the show because it is such an important part, I think, of any holiday season to figure out how we can all give back. And the important thing here is that these things are not just about the money, honey, although money is always appreciated in your giving to charities, but it's also opportunities to volunteer either yourself or you and some friends, your family over this holiday season. Excuse me, got a little frog in my throat this afternoon. Again, that's going to kick off today at about 3:40. So get your favorite local charities ready to go, y'all. We're going to do that. I'll share with you some of mine. Cardi might have a couple of his favorite charities in and around the Milwaukee area. But whether you're from Rhinelander to Racine, Wausau to Waukesha, we want to hear all about it. Again, that's going to kick off at about 3:40, 3:45 today. It's how we'll end the show together. You can always find real news and great conversation right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. And I got two fabulous guests today to help us do just that. We had breaking news yesterday, literally as I got on the air. Act 10 basically being not just ruled unconstitutional, but the judge who found it unconstitutional back in July saying, yeah, the law can't be severed. We can't void parts of it. The whole thing goes. And that was what his decision was about. Civic Media's political editor, Dan Schaefer, is here with me and each and every one of you right now to help us dive into this. If you have thoughts about Act 10, good, bad, questions, because it's a wee bit complicated, I absolutely want to hear from you, okay? 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. And I'll tell y'all, I have a really interesting perspective on Act 10 because I started my work in local government right after Act 10 took effect back in 2011. That's when I started at the City of Milwaukee. I then ran one of the City of Milwaukee's retirement plans, so something that had been impacted by Act 10, albeit a little bit indirectly. I didn't run the pension. I did advise the pension when I first started at the city, so I know about that. I then moved to Milwaukee County, where we still had public safety unions. We negotiated their collective bargaining agreements every year, and we had general service employees who weren't in unions bargaining for their whole panoply of benefits. So I have seen every angle of the impact of Act 10, and we can have a really good and candid conversation about that. But I want to bring Dan in. Thanks so much for making time, Dan. Really appreciate it. Help us. Can you set the stage a little bit for those of us who don't remember those wild times back after Scott Walker was elected in November of 2010 and what then came afterwards? There were just a couple of 2-3 protests, weren't there? Did some legislators leave the state? I think I remember something about that.
Yeah, it was this small little thing that happened in Wisconsin. Only, 100,000 people converging on the Capitol to protest against this law. Obviously, a huge, huge seismic change for the state of Wisconsin when Walker pushed Act 10 through that banned most collective bargaining among public employees, pretty much gave massive pay cuts to pretty much everybody in the public sector in the state of Wisconsin as well. It was obviously extremely controversial. It led to the recall attempt for Scott Walker. Really was the signature law passed under Scott Walker's first term as governor in the state of Wisconsin. And yeah, it is kind of discombobulating, right?
It is very discombobulating, Dan.
To have this overturned at this moment. You know, obviously the changes in the Wisconsin Supreme Court, the changes with the, kind of different approaches brought forth here. And so when I saw this news come across yesterday, I know this case had been discussed in so many ways and had been challenged in a variety of different ways. And this particular one claiming that it violates the right to equal protection of the law to keep Act 10 intact. One of the key aspects of Act 10 was that it approached things differently for public employees based on, basically the police and fire kind of had their own carve out here where the Act 10 changes did not apply to them in the same way as they did for all of the rest of the, kind of teachers and other state employees in public sector unions. And because of that, that has led to the biggest decline in union membership of any state in the country. I think It was the Wisconsin Policy Forum identified that no state saw a larger decline in the number of its workforce that is unionized than Wisconsin over the past decade or so. So it has had a profound effect on the state. Now, what my question is, and what has me especially discombobulated now, is what material difference does this change have on people? Because we know it's going to get appealed.
Right.
Right. We know this is going to go to the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Obviously, this will be a huge factor in the spring election for the race for Wisconsin Supreme Court, since this is back in the spotlight. But here's my question to you, and you're having the legal expertise and the experience that you have.
Let's underpromise, Dan. Let's underpromise.
What material difference does this have now versus, 48 hours ago before this happened?
So immediately none, zero, because it's going to be appealed, right? It will eventually go up to the state Supreme Court. But I think one of the things to help put this all into perspective is to look back on what did Act 10 perhaps is a better construction, general service public employees. That meaning those that work in government at the local or state level that were not police and fire, okay? That's the question, because it basically created two classes of employees. You had police and fire that still had all of the bargaining rights that they have always had for their union. They were explicitly carved out. Every other public sector employee basically lost the right to bargain for anything other than a COLA adjustment. So what that means is you could still join a union, But why the hell am I going to pay union dues if the only thing it's ever going to get me is a little COLA bump? Like, you know, union dues, I have a couple of friends who are teachers. They still belong to MTEA. Union dues would get them, you know, the COLA bump. Maybe if they got sued, they would get representation from the union in addition to from MPS. But I mean, for many people, I think they've had a hard time articulating what union benefit they gained after Act 10. That was the point, right? Like, union membership therefore dropped precipitously. This was a union busting law, plain and simple. That's absolutely right. And that's what it was. And the context here, and Dan, if you disagree at all, like, pipe in additional color commentary. The context here was a brass knuckled political deal, right? It was a political deal between police and fire unions and Scott Walker and the Republicans. And basically, like, we'll keep supporting you and oppose a recall as long as you leave our stuff alone. Like, don't take any of our stuff, meaning our ability to bargain and argue for increased pension amounts, increased pension contributions, et cetera, et cetera. You just leave our goodies alone. You can screw all other public employees and we'll continue to support you. And that's exactly what's happened. Here's the other big meta context that I don't want us to miss, and that I want to quantify a little bit what it means for what it meant for general service employees as soon as we couldn't bargain for pension benefits or all those other things, right? It also was the first step under the Walker administration with a gerrymandered control of the state legislature. Remember, right to work then came right after Act 10, right? That was after Walker survived the recount, or excuse me, the recall, recounts and recalls. We have all these things here in Wisconsin. Survived the recall, right? And then he did right to work. Right to work sounds like, well, I have a right to work. What it was more, all of this should just be called union busting legislation, because that's what it was.
And there was the famous moment in that documentary, I believe, yes, the Asgo's Wisconsin documentary produced in the early 2010s, that showed Scott Walker talking to one of his biggest donors, Diane Hendricks, saying, like, you know, she was asking him, when are we going to get to deal with the right to work law? Yep. And he said explicitly to her that we're going to do divide and conquer. So that was the strategy, to divide and conquer and divide the state. But, you know, is union, the traditionally Democratic union base of the state, and try to run over them in that way.
And it's been
way
incredibly successful. We've right seen the fracturing of the vote. We're going to talk more about the actual monetary implications of Act 10 and what this might mean if upheld on appeal for public employees. I was once one. I was in your shoes, y'all. We're going to talk about it more with political editor Dan Schaefer. Keep it locked right here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
I'm going to do my song now.
Okay, yeah. I went my own way and I made it. I'm your favorite reference, baby. Call me Debbie, you're so inside.
Call me. Don't call Charlie. Call me. 855-75-CIVIC. 855-752-4842. Folks, I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show. I got special guest political editor Dan Schaefer. We're talking about the Act 10 decision, which came down, the remedy decision came down yesterday. Here's where we're at. A Dane County judge has basically declared Act 10 unconstitutional and has said the whole law needs to get wiped off the books. Contextually, what did Act 10 do? It didn't make unions illegal. It just made it illegal for any unions other than police and fire unions, and not even all of them, so for general public sector employees, to bargain for anything other than a COLA adjustment, which basically made unions sort of irrelevant at a certain level, and unsurprisingly, union membership plummeted. Here's what else happened unsurprisingly. Employees hired after Act 10 took effect ended up paying a much, much, much larger amount of their paycheck towards their pension benefits. That happened. And so real wages for employees that were hired after Act 10 went down. So you might be hired in the same like government service category, but your friend down the hall from you that might have been hired a year before or 2 years before would effectively make way more money than you did. Sometimes in excess of 10% more. So it had a real wage decreasing impact because employees were required to make much larger contributions to their pension funds and they couldn't bargain over that, right? Like, I'm not going to have a great amount of success like going to the city of Milwaukee by myself and saying, hey, I'd like you, just for me though, to actually pay more into my pension. Like, that's not how it works when you run these big governments. So it cost employees a lot. It also created a system where employees within the same departments and employees within the same jurisdiction were being treated drastically differently, not based on competence, not based on quality of work or efficiency or any of those things. People in the exact same jobs doing the exact same things were getting compensated very differently. There was lots of inequities that happened. And frankly, I experienced this. I was a union member when I joined the city of Milwaukee. Their city attorney union was still there. There were some, hey, you're not treated the same as me. It created divisions even within the employee ranks, both in a literal sense, but all in the like esprit du corps. Like, people didn't feel like we were all in this together. Now, many years out from Act 10, a lot of the folks that came into service prior to Act 10 have retired. Many just left after Act 10. There was a major exodus from public service after Act 10. So it's more normalized now. HR departments aren't trying to negotiate with 15 or 20 different public unions every year for another collective bargaining agreement. But public employees have been paying a lot more for all of their benefits. Healthcare, pension, sick leave, you name it, we're paying much, much more. I'll just say this, and then Dan, I want to kick it to you for your thoughts. It is interesting because I've had so many people attack me to my face for being in government. Oh, you got the golden parachute. You guys just suck on the teat of the taxpayer. And I'm like, hey, if you want to make that complaint, make that complaint about the folks from 20 years ago that got the pension deal of deals from Milwaukee County. Make it, that ain't me. I'm paying with all my blood, sweat, and tears. And I think a lot of public employees felt that they paid all the reputational costs while they got economically screwed by Act 10. And the ones that ran off with the big sacks of money were folks that never got the ire of the public in the way that public employees in recent memory have. So I think it's had all kinds of both very direct economic consequences. It's changed the incentive structure for people to go into public service, reducing it because the overall benefits are a shadow of what they used to be, for good or for bad. And thirdly, again, people paid a high reputational price when they weren't the ones with the platinum benefits packages. It was a great irony. Dan, go ahead. Your impressions of where we stand today.
Well, and I think, you know, the question that I have with this is, okay, there were all these cuts that came with Act 10, all these changes to the kind of foundational framework of the way that we compensate public employees. But to what end? Right. And to what end is have we done this? Has this materially changed the economy in Wisconsin, the way that we spend public dollars in Wisconsin? Most of what the Wisconsin Republicans who were in charge at the time of Act 10 also did was give large tax breaks to the many of the wealthiest Wisconsinites. One of the things that the Republicans also claim over and over again is how much Act 10 has saved Wisconsin taxpayers, right? They will invent these numbers, and they always like to push numbers from places like the McIver Institute, which just plucks these things out of thin air, and we, as many, you know, nonpartisan sources that we have to back it up, you know, they will never verify those numbers. But we all they say it saves local governments money. Well, what was one of the biggest stories that we had last year in the state of Wisconsin was dealing with the broken shared revenue system. So if the goal of Act 10 was to solve this local government funding crisis,
it didn't do that.
It didn't do that because, you know, a decade later, they had to come back and fix the same system that was broken all over again because the formula was broken and they were, you know, state was hoovering up all of this taxpayer money from around the state and not sending it back to local municipalities. Now that was changed a little bit by the shared revenue law last year, but there are still many communities around the state who are still dealing with this problem, partially because they split the categories of public employees into two categories, the public safety, quote unquote, category, and the general employee. And so that's my question too. It's just, to what end has this accomplished any goals? Because it has not produced the success that they are claiming that it is directly responsible for.
I'm going to take up Dan's question because there's layers of impacts here that I think we need to peel apart. We're going to do that after the bottom of the hour. We've got another great guest coming up, so we're going to finish this conversation, Dan, if you can stick around, about the Act 10 ruling. We've then got another great guest coming on. You're not going to want to go anywhere. I'm Maggie Dawn. Our discussion continues, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
What's up, everybody? I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Still with me is our political editor, Dan Schaefer. We're talking about the Act 10 decision. The baseline of the argument from Republicans has been Act 10 saved money. And I think we have to concede that point to a certain extent. There is no question, and I'll talk about the two jurisdictions that I worked for. There's no question that the amount of money that the city and the county were paying towards employee pensions reduced, went down a bunch. And the reason it went down a bunch is because employees were now picking up a much greater portion of that tab. But in doing so, there were all kinds of other bad impacts, if you will, which I've listed a couple of them. There were divisions amongst employee ranks, people doing the exact same job, getting compensated in very, very different ways, regardless of their skill or their expertise or their efficiency. And here's the reality that has not been addressed. This wasn't about cost savings. This was about union busting. And the cost driver that is the greatest at the city of Milwaukee, to a lesser extent at the county, but still a massive amount of cost on a year-over-year basis, comes from public safety, pension, and health benefits. It is the largest item on the city of Milwaukee's balance sheet. The county spends more for the jail and for the sheriff's department than almost anywhere else in its budget. So the two or three or four unions that had the biggest, that their benefits had the biggest, most crippling, if you will, impact on local governmental budgets, Act 10 didn't touch. So what I mean to say is, yes, it saved money, but it wasn't about that. Because if it was about that, they wouldn't have carved out police and fire, right? And if it was, you get my point. And so the impacts of this, I think, are really misrepresented, sometimes on both sides. I believe that every employee in any business has the right to organize and bargain for every benefit, including salary and pension or 401ks or whatever it is. The idea that a state can strip that from certain employees seems to me to be unconstitutional on its face. That the idea that a state can say some employees get to do that, but others don't, seems to be unconstitutional on its face to me. And yet, do I think that public sector pension benefits were bloated at the city and the county? Yeah, they were. Did public pension benefits need to get reined in? Could the state have, instead of using an axe and crippling and taking out unions, provided local governments with some additional tools to rein in those benefits? Yeah, they could have. They didn't, because it was never about the cost savings. It wasn't that. This was straight up union busting and a political deal with police and fire unions who have lined up to support Republicans ever since. Dan, what are your last thoughts? This won't be the last time we discuss this, certainly, because it's going to be fascinating to watch the appeals move forward.
Yeah, I think that has always been the splitting the two different types of employees has always been the most nakedly political aspect of this law. And it is fitting, perhaps, that it is that very aspect, that equal protection aspect of this law, that is going to take it down, or at least has in the ruling from the Dane County judge yesterday. And I think that is a really critical component of this. And it's not, you know, like you said, did we need to take an axe to this? Probably not. It maybe would have been better to use the scalpel versus the axe,
right,
in this particular context. But I think overall, it is so obviously political.
Yes.
What they did with carving out the benefits for police and fire, who supported Republicans because of it, and continue to. And so if Republicans actually want to, you know, stand on business with this law and support what they believe, do it for everybody.
Do it for everybody.
Do it for even those who are your, you know, political allies and not your political adversaries. If you really believe in this as a way to govern, got to do it for everybody, and you can't just do it for the people who are opposed to you. So I think that is really the critical component here that people should be looking at as this goes forward. And we know it's going to go to appeals. We know it's going to probably end up in the Wisconsin Supreme Court. My question with that too, and this is, I'll leave you with this and see if, we can come back to this another time. Justice Brian Hagedorn helped write this law.
Yep.
He was Scott Walker's chief counsel.
Does he recuse?
When he wrote this law.
Yeah.
Should he be asked to recuse himself in this case if this does reach the Wisconsin Supreme Court? I think that's a question that people should be asking right about now too.
Yeah, it's fascinating. We could talk about this for the entire 2 hours. I did want to give a shout out to Eric from Madison asking the question that is on every public employee's mind, unless you're police and fire, and that, hey, if it's declared unconstitutional and that ruling holds, when am I going to get made whole for all those pension contributions I made? I guarantee you, Eric, every budget director that works for a governmental jurisdiction and every HR director that works for a governmental jurisdiction right now is going through some mental gymnastics, because this would be incredibly complicated to try to figure out what the implications are. I don't think anybody's getting made whole. This would be on a go forward basis only, but having to sort of reclassify and then deal with, potentially 20 plus new unions getting reformed and bargaining again. I mean, I'll tell you what this does do. It's the Full Employment Act and a Christmas holiday bonus for any collective bargaining lawyer in the entire state of Wisconsin. So all the labor lawyers out there are like, woohoo! Maybe we get huge, huge retainer bonuses. We got to leave it there. Dan, I'm going to have you come back. We're going to talk more about this because it's endlessly fascinating. Thank you to everybody. If I didn't get to your texts or phone calls, do not worry. This will not be your only crack at this. We will be talking about this in the future. Thanks so much, Dan Schaefer, Civic Media's political editor. We are going to turn the page. Again, if I didn't get to your comments or calls. I apologize, but I do want to bring my next guest on. It is Dr. Ben Weston. He is the director, advisor of medical policy for Milwaukee County. Ben, you and I used to work together. It's so nice to see you again. You were quoted extensively in an article that came out just a few days ago in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel about sort of some of the trends that we're seeing in Milwaukee County. Some not so good, but some providing a glimmer of hope. Ben, please explain what statistics we're talking about here, where people can find out more, and what these glimmers of hope were.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. It's good to be here and good to see you, Maggie. So it's a long report. This is the 2023 annual report from the Milwaukee County Medical Examiner. So if you have a few hours on your hands and want to read all 35 pages, it's on their website. And you can go through it, but maybe I'll give the highlights. So the Medical Examiner breaks down deaths into a few different categories. And in some of those categories, we're seeing some hopeful signs. And so maybe the first one to start with is natural deaths. Now, natural deaths are you know, in theory, from natural causes, from medical type causes, as opposed to homicide, suicide, or what they categorize as accident. And so when we look at natural deaths from about a long, long time ago until 2019, they were pretty stagnant, right around 800 or so a year. These are natural deaths that the medical examiner investigates and looks into. But then, of course, in 2020, we saw this huge jump from 800 up to about 2100 because of, as you can guess, COVID. And then that kind of has been gradually coming down. And the good news is in 2023, we're pretty close to back to that baseline. It's still a little bit above, and that's probably still reflecting COVID deaths. There certainly are still a lot of COVID deaths out there. Thankfully, they're not for young, healthy folks like it used to be. Now, that doesn't make it any better for older folks with medical conditions who are still getting sick and unfortunately far too often dying from COVID. But it is encouraging to see these numbers declining over time. So that was one kind of area of good news. The other one is when we look at accidental deaths. Now, included in this category of accidental deaths are overdoses.
Yeah.
And what we've seen since 2015, every single year since 2015 has been an increase in accidental deaths. Without
including,
exception.
Including those year. Overdoses. Yep.
Including those overdoses. And our overdose data really mirrors that. It's been since 2016, but every single year since 2016, we've seen an increase in overdose deaths, specifically opioid. We're talking about fentanyl mostly, overdose deaths. Now, we saw, and we've talked about this before, we saw in 2023 the first decline in opioid overdose deaths in those 7 years since 2016. We saw that first decline in opioid deaths. Now, it was modest. It's only a few percent. But boy, when it's been going up for 6 years, we'll take what we can get with that decline. And I think that decline reflects a lot of the work that has been going on in Milwaukee County, which we can certainly talk about. But we're seeing that reflected in accidental deaths as well, is this first decline in so many years. And so those are a few of the hopeful things that we're seeing. Just to summarize the other two, since we talked about them, with suicide-related deaths, we're still seeing pretty stagnant numbers. They went up a touch during the pandemic, but we're at about, it was 117 this year, which is pretty close to what it was in the pre-pandemic area. And then for homicide deaths, we actually saw the first decline in 5 years since 2018 in homicide deaths, which we can certainly be thankful for, and a pretty substantial decline from 246 in a year down to 201. So really declines in every single death category in 2023. There's a lot of reasons for that, but also reason to be hopeful that we can continue these promising trends.
It was, I was really heartened to see that. Obviously, I had a front row seat when we were looking at those opioid overdoses and deaths, and seeing those numbers almost inexorably creeping up and creeping up. And it's so heartening to see those numbers finally start, hopefully starting to level off, that some of the remediation efforts led by yourself, David Crowley, the county board, the city, and other jurisdictions, to get those harm reduction vending machines out there, to make sure that there is bed space for people who are in the deepest throes of addiction, that these things, as well as the education around prevention, right, that these things are hopefully starting to have an impact, and we're hopefully starting to see that in the numbers. Ben, if people, where are some good resources if people want to get some help, if they or someone they know or love is struggling with addiction, if they want to perhaps turn in a handgun or a gun? Do you have some resources for folks in this regard?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, your one-stop shop is probably the Milwaukee County Crisis Line. It's 414-257-7222. And the philosophy of Milwaukee County Health and Human Services is no wrong door. And so if you call that line, they can connect you up with the appropriate services for what help you need. And what Milwaukee County has been working to do under the leadership of County Executive Crowley is to work both upstream and downstream to address all these issues. But since we're talking about it, particularly substance use disorder, opioid use disorder, and upstream, maybe we'll start with downstream. Downstream is the stuff we talked about. So it's harm reduction vending machines. It's like a soda vending machine, except it has naloxone nasal spray and fentanyl test strips and medication lock bags, also gun locks in it. Yep. And they're free. You push the button. You can come and push the button as many times as you want and get more supplies and hand them out to other folks as well. But these are the sort of supplies going out. We have naloxone in the back of every ambulance. We have it in the back of every sheriff's vehicle, police vehicles from Milwaukee Police Department. You ask them for it. They don't ask for your information. They don't ask why you want it. They just give it to you. And that's pretty unusual, especially for law enforcement. And so lots of ways to get harm reduction resources. We're also doing, Milwaukee County was the first in the state, one of the first in the country to do buprenorphine. This is medication-assisted treatment. It's like methadone, but kind of the newer version in a way. We're doing it in the field. You don't have to go to any special clinic to get started. You can do that right there in the field, and our paramedics will start you on that. And then, of course, it's about all the upstream interventions as well.
Let me just hop in there. Ben, can you stick around for one more segment? We'll dig in some more. Dr. Ben Weston of Milwaukee County. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked, y'all.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Listen, y'all, I continue to get a ton of text and feedback about the Act 10 decision and about collective bargaining, both in general and specifically within the context of public sector unions. I'm going to revisit this topic at the top of the hour because y'all are really into it. So stay tuned. We are going to come back to that. I'm going to take up some of your texts and calls at the top of the hour. If you remain interested in that, please stay tuned. Right now, we've got Dr. Ben Weston, medical policy advisor for Milwaukee County. Milwaukee County has adopted what Dr. Ben has described as the no wrong door approach. So even if you're outside of the county, if you need to know, like, hey, where do I get directed? Hey, what is my county counterpart there? Folks at Milwaukee County will help you. You can reach out to our Department of Health and Human Services. I come to you from WAUK, just outside of Milwaukee County. That is 540 a.m., blanketing southeastern Wisconsin, but you can always find me on the Civic Media app, where you can also find your local Civic Media talk radio station, so you can listen live on the radio wherever you are or wherever you're driving. But of course, since we're talking public health, please buckle up and don't drive super fast. It gets a little dangerous. Thanks, Ben, for making more time for us. I wanted to have you drop again that crisis line for Milwaukee County. What was that number again? If people, again, you've got a substance abuse issue, you might be, or someone you love, considering suicide, you want to turn in a gun, any of these things, we can help get you going in the right direction. What's that number again, Ben?
257-7222.
So that's 414-257. And what was the last part again?
7222.
Awesome. We're going to put that in the show notes today as well. And I think, Ben, we'd be remiss if we did not give a plug to the nationwide suicide hotline, 988. This should become as familiar to all of us as 911 is. If you or someone you know or love is struggling with suicide, if someone has reached out to you and you want to know how to talk to them, 988. That's all you need to dial. There are folks that will answer that in the basically in your locality, so they are familiar with the area. They can direct you to other support services. They have many, many different language speakers. So if you need a particular language, they've got that hooked up. You can, again, 414-257-7222. You can text the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 988 or text HOPELINE to the National Crisis Text Line. That's 741-741. I wanted to talk a little bit about gun deaths in Wisconsin. The Journal Sentinel, a journalist by the name of John Dietrich, has been doing a series of articles. And one of the takeaways from John's work is that suicide, firearm-related suicide, it is the vast majority of gun-related deaths in the state. I think it's somewhere close to like, or it's like 3/4 of suicides use firearms. It's a big, big problem. Ben, what can you tell us about it? What are the trends in Milwaukee County looking like? What should people be aware of?
Yeah, so I think what you just pointed out is a really important point that a lot of folks don't realize or don't think about, is that when we think of gun violence, a big part of that, and as you mentioned, the majority of that is suicide-related gun violence. And so when we think of how to address gun violence, of course we have to go after homicide-related gun violence, but equally so, because of the number of folks affected, we have to go after suicide-associated gun violence as well. And so there's a number of different ways the county's doing that. I hate to keep harping on upstream and downstream, but it's really the paradigm that we follow. And so when you think upstream, it's the same in a lot of ways, whether we're talking about substance use or suicide or so many other things in Milwaukee County. I think it starts with housing. Housing is health. If somebody is unhoused or not stably housed, it's hard to get everything else in their life in order. And that's why Milwaukee County's Housing First initiative has been so successful. You're very familiar with that as well. And it's the idea that housing has to come first. It's hard to tell somebody, well, sure, we'll give you housing, but you have to have a stable income and you have to have no mental health issues and you have to have a good job. And it's like, well, how do you do all that stuff if you don't have housing? And so it turns out that if you give somebody housing, a lot of those things tend to fall into place. And that's part of the reason why Milwaukee County has been leading the nation in some of the lowest unsheltered populations of any county in the country per capita. And so it starts with housing, but it also starts with mental health services. Milwaukee County, County Executive Crowley has really overhauled the entire mental health infrastructure in Milwaukee County, not just moving emergency services to kind of the heart of the community, but expanding access clinics where you can walk in and same day be assessed, see a social worker, see a psychiatrist. I mean, that's unheard of. People wait on lists for 8 months to see a psychiatrist. And in Milwaukee County, you can walk in and see somebody and get an assessment the same day. And so there's access clinics kind of sprinkled throughout the county. That's another good reason to call that phone number and get connected up with one of those, or you can just search online for it. And so that's upstream. But when we go downstream, we'll come back to the vending machines for just one example, is gun locks. Gun locks are a really great way to prevent that often sporadic sort of decision of suicide by firearm. So there's a lot going on in the county, and we're happy to see that deaths are going down.
Folks, that's Dr. Ben Weston, health policy advisor from Milwaukee County. If you want to know where you can get a gun lock in your county, if they're available for free, other interventions, go ahead and Google whatever your county name is, Department of Health and Human Services. You can always reach out to Milwaukee County. Again, that number is 414-257-7222. Thanks so much, Dr. Ben. It's always a real pleasure to have you. We'll be back after the top of the hour. And just a note, on Thursday, I'm going to be joined by Journal Sentinel reporter John Dietrich. They're having the next article in his series come out on Thursday. Don't miss that interview. We're going to come back, talk more about Act 10 and how the heck does MAGA measure success in the Trump 2.0 administration. All that and more coming up next, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops. but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.